Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Decorating Pages is a podcast dedicated to taking you behind the scenes of the designs of your favorite TV shows and films. Each episode, I'll be sharing design stories from some of Hollywood's most famous sets, interviews from set decorators, production designers, directors, and actors about creating the look of TV and film, about their design inspirations, and stories that take sets from page to screen. Hello, and welcome to Decorating Pages. I'm your host, Kim Wanup. How are you? How you doing? I'm feeling great. I'm feeling great because I finished For All Mankind Season 4, and I am done. The crew is still working. The swing crew usually stays on afterwards and wraps up the show a little bit longer. They are taking sets down and putting them into storage, and a lot of paperwork at the end, which, you know, you sort of get emails here and there, but it's nothing compared to the day-to-day. I literally on this show, I was probably getting an average of 50 emails a day at least, between just drawings being released and meeting schedules and just... bullshit. call sheets and pre-call sheets and pre-pre-call sheets. I never worked on a production. Well, I mean, it was helpful, but getting like pre-pre-call sheets, like, okay. I mean, how much do I have to look at here? But it was helpful, but it's a lot. So I am glad not to have anything. And like I said on the previous episode, I'm still kind of in this haze of... Like, I just feel like the phone's going to ring at any moment. I think it's anxiety. But there's also this restlessness of I have this overwhelming list of personal shit to do and get to that you put off when you're working. And it's so overwhelming that I'm still kind of in a haze about it. But... I'm actually going away. We're going on vacation this week. So I'm hoping to just relax. And then when I get back, I'll deal with it. How about that? Just enjoying not working. Let's put it that way. And I'm enjoying really diving much more into this podcast. I mean, I have a couple great episodes coming up. I have scheduled with some really great production designers and set decorators, costume designers. So a lot coming up, getting to it. I hope you are enjoying new posts that have been online and social media. And I started to take bits of episodes I did mostly with Denise Pizzini, production designer, on the last episode on TikTok, and just taking little clips and showing you the work that she's talking about. So if you're not on TikTok, I gotta try to get it to a reel. I don't know how to do this shit. I need a class. That's what I really need, is a class to tell me how to do all this. Yeah, because I need that. But... I've been watching a little bit of TV. I watched She Said, the film about Harvey Weinstein, production designer Meredith Limcott, and set decorator Philippia Culpepper. Philippia, yeah, I think I said that right. Great job. I mean, I've done the New York Times bullpen, dated, but it's a big job. It's a big dress. It's, you know, it's very contemporary. The film looks great. It's vibrant. The people's houses, I thought, were layered really beautifully of like having kids in small New York apartments. And I enjoyed those apartments of the main characters. I zipped through Hunters season 2, which is rough. Hunters, if you're not aware, is on Amazon, and it's about, unfortunately fictional or not, people who are hunting down Nazis in the 70s. And in this episode, this season, they find Hitler, and it goes all into that. There's some rough scenes, but I find the design, this season was done by Richard Bloom, and set decoration by Lynette McCowan, fantastic. And I think that I saw some locations that I've shot in, like the Biltmore and shit, but I think a lot of their locations were, I don't know where they were. I was like, did they do all this in Hungary, or like, where did they, Budapest? I don't know where they shot, but some really beautiful, decadent locations in that show. And since it's period, I just really liked it. But I did hurry to get through it because of the subject matter of like, I gotta get through this. But it's good. I liked it. And then here and there, I'm watching Veep. I still haven't gotten to season 4. We've kind of slowed down and rewatching it, but still a great rewatch. If anyone's looking for a comedy to rewatch, I can't say enough about my own work. No, I didn't get there till season 4, but I love it. I love the show. So yeah, and I really miss it. As hard as it was, I miss it. So that's what I've been up to. And as you're listening to this, I'm on the beach somewhere in the world. So this is fantastic. So, but on this episode, I speak with set decorator Tara Stevenson Fong. Tara grew up in Hollywood and was introduced to production design by her father, production designer Edward Stevenson, who decorated such iconic shows like my favorite, The Golden Girls. He did Good Times, Sanford and Son, Maude, and so many other iconic sets. It's incredible. So I am sure he had this passion and probably just adore that he could pass it on to his daughter. And so Tara interned at a young age and grew up around all this and was influenced, I'm sure, by all his amazing work. She was an assistant art director on some shows, and then she shifted to set decorating. And then she has such long-running hit shows for decorating. It's incredible. Third Rock from the Sun, That 70s Show, Greek. She did some Modern Family in there. Recently, she did the show Be Positive, The Ranch, which is on Netflix. And now she is doing That 90s Show, which is That 70s Show, but in the 90s. So she had the task of recreating a lot of The 70s Show into the 90s and bringing it up to date for that era. It's fantastic work. And then, as if it's not enough, Tara also is the owner of Hollywood Studio Gallery, which is one of the best resources in Hollywood for cleared artwork for TV and film. Check them out at hollywoodstudiogallery.com. It's a gem. And if you're doing a tour of Hollywood for prop houses, you got to hit that one. It's one of the best. So, and I'm so glad I got to speak with her. I hardly ever get to see her. And I learned a lot. So I hope you enjoy. Scheduling wise, I never run into them.
Right. I haven't been, I finished my show in December and have been off.
Oh, that's so nice.
I think like everybody else, I think it's a weird time right now.
Yeah, I just finished, I'm rapping right now, and I'm kind of like, not a people are, I know I'm not going to first call, so
Right. Well, for me, there's not a lot of, I did a 1 hour, at the end of last year, and I'm like, where are the sitcoms? Ready for sitcoms to come back? And
yeah.
Hoping that 90s gets picked up, but we haven't heard yet.
I can't imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. Netflix is a little finicky.
But you know, I watched the whole thing, and then I'm like, oh, well, she went home. Like,
yeah. Then I'm like, it's, you know, it's all about summer break, so who knows what they're going to do. Hopefully they'll bring us back. The producer reached out to me yesterday going, what are you doing? Are you working? And I'm like, no. He goes, I haven't heard anything, but just check in to see what your availability is.
They'd have to make the parents move back there. I mean, that would be, or I don't know.
Or they just, she goes and visits.
Yeah.
And that's her summer vacation visit. So,
yeah.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I only watched That 70s Show here and there, like in reruns. I didn't watch it when it was on, but I always liked it. I just never, like, was into it when it was on. And I thought, man, I wonder if there was, like, excitement to get back into that, or was there, like, oh my God, I gotta find all this shit that I had for so long, and I gotta try to, like, make it look like it was, but different.
Oh, well, I mean, for me, I went back and watched like the first 10 or 12 episodes. Mm. I bought the DVDs because it's nowhere to be. It's not streaming anywhere.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, I haven't looked at that set in 15 plus years.
Right.
And so for me, I was like, what was in there before? I mean, the basics I kind of understood and knew what I was looking at, but it had been so long since I had revisited those sets and were on them on a daily basis that I couldn't remember everything. And when I read the pilot episode of the 90s show script, it said, you know, the basement's pretty much unchanged, but all the living room furniture is now in the basement. And I went, oh, I'm never going to find that fabric. And where am I going to find that? And wait, I have to kind of recreate the basement, which, you know, where am I going to find all those items that were in there? Because I was really particular about trying to keep, it needed to feel nostalgic and comforting.
Yeah.
So a lot of the elements still needed to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you have people who are such fans of the show, and you want to...
Huge fans.
And you, having done the show, you want to do it right. You don't want to be like, oh, that's, you know, whatever. They didn't know. It's whatever. But when you did it yourself, you're kind of like, no. I can look back at pictures and kind of, some of it comes back to you.
I'm sure. I mean, it was as crazy as me sitting down and making a spreadsheet every set and trying to find elements that were there the first time. So I had to, there's a American flag trunk in the basement. That I was like, okay, let me see if I can find that. But I mean, I literally made a spreadsheet of like, okay, this wall, and these are the items I'm looking for. This wall, these are the items I'm looking for.
Smart.
And then it was just kind of recreating and then updating as we felt was necessary. Like we felt that the dryer in the basement probably is still running from the 70s because it's only 20 years later. I have a dryer that still works, but my washer crapped out, so I bought a new washer.
Right.
So that's, we kind of played on that idea. But then, you know, you still want to have those elements that are comforting that are there. You know, we had some clearance issues because there were different clearances for artwork and such. So I couldn't bring back some of the original 70s posters that we had in the basement the first time.
That's so crazy. And you're on streaming. That's what's so crazy to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's stupid.
But, you know, I couldn't have, you know, most of the posters that were in there. So we created our own for the show and still gave it that homage to the 70s show.
Yeah. Was anything given to Fox, like archives, that you were able to bring? No? Nothing?
Nothing.
Really?
I mean, now I will say Deborah Jo Rupp, who plays Kitty, reached out to me immediately and said, I have the grapes that were on the living room table. Aww. I have the cheese grater lamp that hangs above the sink in the kitchen. She's like, I have all the art glass from the 70s. Do you want me to bring it? Now, she lives in on the East Coast, and she was driving across the country with two dogs and a friend of hers. And I was like, do not pack your car up with a bunch of stuff. If I get desperate and I cannot find stuff to replace it, I will reach out and let you know. But
that's super kind.
Completely.
And admitting that she took stuff, which everybody does. Everybody does.
I was going to say, every actor took stuff. I mean, I was having a hard time finding this little orange stool that sits in the basement. And then I get a random email from Ashton Kutcher's assistant saying, hey, Ashton and Mila have this stool with the knitted pillow. Do you want it? And I was like, yes, I will take it for sure.
Oh my God.
That's so insane. You know, because that was something I was like, I think I have to have this made because I can't find it.
I was wondering that with like patterns and fabrics, how much you had to have made to
I had duplicate. The living room sofa, the 70s living room sofa.
Made.
From a photograph.
Wow. And yeah. What about, I mean, at least you only had to have one thing. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, and I had to have the chair made too. The green chair from the sofa. I mean, from the living room.
Because they didn't move that down. He kept his chair.
They moved that down. No, they moved it down.
Oh, they did move it down.
I couldn't find it.
No.
And so I was like, I found a chair that had similar bones, and then Warner Brothers Drapery and Upholstery did their magic and built it out to make it look like the chair that was there.
Amazing.
I wish it, it's funny. I was, when Topher came on set, cause he was in the pilot episode, he's like, oh, I had the basement sofa. And I was like, that little love seat. So he goes, yeah. And then my wife made me throw it out. And I was like, well, rightfully so. It's kind of junk when we had it on the set.
Yeah, really.
20 years ago.
It did hundreds of episodes. And then you took it
200 episodes on that show.
God, that's a great one.
And I will have to say, I mean, Bill Gregory was the one who did the pilot and the first 10 episodes, and he did a beautiful job. And I always want to give him credit on where credit's due, because he created an atmosphere that then I felt I stepped into, and I was the steward of his work.
Yeah. There's always something, because I feel like I take over a lot of shows. There's this respect of, they made this decision for a reason, I always think like, oh man, I would have never thought of that. I would have never done that.
And then we added along the way, and you know, it grew and changed slightly, and at that time it was very much like, let me see how much more we could add to it, but still staying with what the original vision was.
Yeah.
And then with 90s, they kind of let me do let me go with it.
That's awesome.
There wasn't a lot of input other than what was scripted. And then I worked, Greg Grande was the production designer on it. And he and I worked hand in hand with colors and wallpaper. And then from there, I just kind of went on themes and did a lot of 90s research, which wasn't a huge decade of design.
No. And it's all over the place.
Completely all over the place. And this takes place in 95. So I felt like it still had a little bit of an late 80s influence in terms of colors and that sort of thing. And we also felt that we didn't want to do too much. Like, we wanted to keep the architecture the same. We wanted to keep it as if whatever the changes they did were something that was still within their wheelhouse of maybe they did it themselves. Like, Kitty, made new curtains for the house,
right?
And they painted themselves, re-wallpapered themselves. They live on a modest budget.
Yeah.
And so we didn't want it to be over the top or too jarring visually either.
No, I think it's a great job paying tribute to the previous show, but bringing in these 90s elements so you don't still think you're in the 70s. Like, I think, especially the girls' bedrooms, I think are fantastic.
Yeah, they're fun. I felt like for Leia's bedroom in their house. It was Eric's old bedroom.
Right.
Which is kind of funny. And then, but we also wanted to make it like, this is the bedroom that Kitty decorated for her.
Yeah.
And when she comes to visit, this is the place. So there's still childish type elements and then a few Eric elements in there.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's the guest room also. So
I do too think like it's so important to sell the decade with the bedding and like you said, like the curtains, like you had some, I think like some bubble curtains.
Oh yeah, we did some balloon shapes.
Yeah, balloon. Yeah.
And a lot of ruffles. There's a lot, and a lot of, you know, a lot of florals, because that time period was like a lot of crazy florals and ruffles and plaids on top borders. Of chintz and
I know
too much.
There was
I'm so glad it's behind us.
I know. It really couldn't figure itself out in the 90s. Okay, because there's definitely also that like super modern, like really minimalist sort of like geometric shape type like design going on. And,
but so we're also, weird. You know, we kept going back to the fact that they're living in Wisconsin. So Midwest, not, you know, not LA or New York design aesthetics, but more of like a you know, smaller town. Midwest kind of feel.
The girls' rooms, I loved the stickers on the wall that said, like,
oh, Gwen's room. Yeah.
Riot girl. Yeah. Which, I mean, I was a teenager in the 90s. I never knew about Riot Girl or anything like that. I don't know. It wasn't happening in South Jersey. I don't know. But I did a movie that was all about, like, that movement. And I was like, when was this? Where was I? Like, I didn't, it just wasn't in my world at the time. That was,
I think also with Riot Girl, that kind of movement was actually, like, more in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. But it still continued. I mean, she.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. But that, and I think it sells that character too so much.
Completely.
How she's so different from Leia.
Edge.
Yeah.
Right.
And the stickers
she's
are middle fingers.
Cool.
The stickers being middle fingers is pretty cool. I did.
The full rebel for sure.
Yeah. Because you don't really catch that till they do a close up in the later episode when she's on the bed. You don't catch that their middle finger's sticking up, which is fantastic.
I know. I watched it with my husband because he never watches my shows, which is kind of funny. But sometimes I'm like, let's watch it.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was like, I'd like to see how it all turned out. And he was like, what is that? And then I was like, oh, their middle fingers. He's like, you can get away with that? I was like, well, it's Netflix. Sure.
I mean, what was your prep like to get it all together and find everything?
They gave me a very generous prep of 6 weeks, which is unheard of for a multi-camera sitcom. It was like kind of hitting the ground running and like going to a lot of antique malls. Mm. And thrift stores and Habitat for Humanity restore shops looking for furniture that I could buy and reupholster.
Yeah.
We rented a few items that I just couldn't find anywhere. But for the most part, we bought absolutely everything. And then it was a lot of like Etsy and eBay.
Yeah.
Wherever I couldn't find it out in the real world.
When you have, is it the same setup as that 70s show? Like, I don't know. Is it still an audience or is it still like?
We actually were an audience show. Like,
wow.
We're still in the pandemic in terms of production. So we're all wearing masks and everything. And this is the first multi-camera sitcom that I've been on since we've gone into the pandemic that had a live studio audience.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guys did it. Well, that's great.
Which is really fun. And the response that you get when you shoot a multi-camera sitcom in front of an audience is completely different than when you pre-shoot it without an audience.
Yeah. I mean,
and the response was crazy.
The energy, I'm sure. I mean, you can hear it when, you know, Ashton or like Topher come in, like seeing the old characters or even Kitty. I mean, they love, you know, they love the parents. Anyone who was there was probably a huge fan of the show.
I stayed for the first pilot shooting of the first episode with the audience, and just the response to seeing the actors they call them the legacy cast now.
Oh. generous.
The legacy it was
list. That's the fantastic.
The response to it was just crazy. I mean, people went wild. But the opening scene with Kitty in the kitchen dancing and making a sandwich was crazy too. The audience just was so excited to see her and Red back. Aww. And
they look good too.
They look fantastic.
They look good.
I don't know how. I'm like, Deborah Jo, how do you look so fantastic?
I know. She's such a spark plug. Like, she just keeps
and
going.
So much energy. And then they're the nicest people.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you shoot on like a Tuesday? What was your
We shoot on a Friday.
You shoot on a
We're
Friday.
We're a Monday through Friday show. Yeah.
So you would get new scripts Monday? Or do you have more time? Or did you get the whole season?
Times. Sometimes we had several episodes in advance.
Oh, that's great.
Here and there, or we'd have outlines. So we kind of knew what we were getting into on a weekly, like a week or week to basis, mm-hmm. week to week basis. We'd, have at least a week of prep, which is nice.
Yeah.
For me, I wanted to, when we would do sets like The Hub, which was an original set from the 70s show, we wanted to give it an updated feel, but still feel nostalgic, but give it, they've painted the walls, they've changed the artwork, and I still feel the same.
That's so fun for the viewer, too, because you're, discovering little nuggets of what you used to watch, and then it's, updated, and you're like, oh, yeah, that for the 90s, that color, that would have gone that color, and,
Right.
No, that's great. The mall was a big set. I mean,
it was a huge set.
That's
and
a huge
we created
set.
That whole Sharper Image, Sharper Image set. I literally found a vintage Sharper Image catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on eBay and Etsy and started buying all the products in their original packaging.
Perfect.
And then we had a graphic artist recreate all the packaging, and then we made all those boxes.
Ugh.
So everything
stores.
In there we made from scratch from original boxes and products.
That's amazing.
Because and then, all the Gap is vintage Gap clothing that I found online.
I know. It's weird because 90s clothes is kind of coming back.
I know.
In a little
baggy
bit.
Baggy pants.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
No, it's nuts.
The I also was thinking as a decorator in the video store, because I've done video stores, and I'm like, oh, my God, a video store. And I'm just looking at, oh my God, they had to make all those boxes. I know you had to make.
We actually thankfully didn't.
You didn't? Who had them? No. Lenny?
We got some from Lenny and a lot from Alley Cat.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I know. It was, thank God, we went in and I was like, what do you got? And they're like, we have all these boxes. I'm like, send us everything. And literally we went through absolutely every single videotape box. Looked at the dates, if it was after 95, then we were Googling, when in 95?
Right, summer, fall?
Summer, fall, before July, if it was after July, we'd kick it to another, kick it back in the box, and then...
I want to put it on the bottom shelf.
No, we had enough, thankfully, we had enough to fill it. But yes, that the initial read of that in the script, I was like, oh, how are we going to do that? And thankfully, we were able to put together enough videotapes to fill out the whole store.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I think I've done it twice, and I know both times, we just had to make the covers and slip them all in, or whatever.
We made our own covers for the video store logo, the Blockbuster one. Ours was called Video Haven. I mean, we made those ourselves. But all the sleeves of the videos that were on the wall and on the shelves, we were actually able to use. Netflix is pretty flexible in terms of saying it's being used in the manner in which it's intended.
Right.
We're not featuring anything. The ones that we do feature, then you have to create your own. But everything else we were able to use, thank God.
Which should be the rule everywhere. I mean, it's,
exactly.
Clearances has become such a nightmare.
It really is.
Such a burden on our department to, like,
yes,
and like check things out, and you're waiting for approval and it didn't get cleared and now we can't use it, and then they're asking for it on set because nobody else knows that you can't use it.
Right.
But it's just a nightmare. The clearance is just a nightmare. It's some, and especially
on every level.
Yeah. And I mean, network's worse, but it was a lot better on streaming, and now they're sort of catching on or something. I don't know.
Well, in terms of artwork, it's always going to be an issue. But you know, we had a great graphic artist on the show, and I sent her, buy a ton of magazines, and I'd scan them all, send them to her, and I was like, can you just make new covers for me? So she made, you know,
oh, that's fantastic.
90s appropriate covers for everything. So knowing that we were in the 90s, it's like, okay, we've also got to deal with like vintage clearance.
Yeah.
Which is also another issue.
Yeah.
Because some things just, it was easier for us to make stuff than it was to try and find. I sourced a bunch of great vintage posters and we just couldn't clear any of them.
Yeah, I know. Because I was just in the 2000s for my show.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, we got all these posters like Kelly Slater, and we tried to get the Matrix to like put up, and it was like, no. I'm like, we're streaming. Like, why can't we just shoot this shit? It's ridiculous.
I know. It would be so much better if it wasn't such an issue. But there's too many people involved, unfortunately.
There's too much fear of getting sued. And what I believe is the people who are making these decisions are lawyers, but really have no idea what we're doing down there or how we're using these things. Like, it's not going to be like in your face Matrix the whole shot. I just want to put it in the background to show this guy's into Neo. Like, I'm not, they're not going to smoke it. They're not going to talk to the poster. Like, they just don't get purpose of how we're using these things in their right, you know, intention to use. And then they just say no. And we lose a little bit of character development, I feel.
Completely. No, I completely agree with you. I think that if when you have to create something, well, they may be great, it's you definitely lose the authenticity of it when it's not the actual poster. Yeah.
Luckily, we have a lot of talented graphic artists in our world and can pump it out. And we have sign shops that can pump it out too. And framing, framing is huge. That's also huge. So, yeah. I loved the 90210 episode.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Is that like, that was like, oh my God, I would have died. I would be like, oh my God, they're bringing on Brian Austin Green. This is fantastic.
Well, when I read it, I was like, are they really getting Brian Austin Green?
Yeah. I feel like he was really into it.
It was funny. I think he was. I wasn't, like, I'm trying to remember. I think I saw the first rehearsal, and I was like, before they shot, because I think he only came in the day we shot. He didn't come in for the whole week of rehearsals.
He's busy.
And I saw him, and I was like, he's into it.
That's, well, yay.
Playing it.
That's what made you. You got to give into it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to remember, none of these kids were alive when that show was on.
That's depressing. Isn't that depressing?
I know. But it's the same. I mean, the same thing happened with the 70s show. Like, most of those kids had never, you know, been alive for...
That's true.
Some of those scenarios.
It only hurts more because I was...
Oh, trust me. I was alive for both of them. So
it's very, like... all my PAs now were born, like, in the 2000s. And I'm like...
Yeah.
What? Do you know about this? Like...
I know.
There was a lot of things for period show the season that I was like, do you know about this?
I mean, even my buyer, I was like, how old are you? Can you channel your like teenager? And she's like, oh yeah, I can channel my teenager or my early tweenager.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah. The chick who played Leia, I thought was really good. I don't know where she came from.
I mean,
I loved her.
I think that this is her first show. And the Turners, Bonnie and Terry Turner, who did that 70s show, who came back to do this time, found Topher. 70s show was his first show also.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
good for him.
So Callie, who plays Leia, this is her first show as well.
That's like, great.
Kind of an unknown, which is cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That is great. Did you guys film, this is probably not, but did you film on the same stage?
No. I wish we did.
I was wondering
It's funny, because the sets were set up the same with the house to the right of the audience and the basement to the left. Mm-hmm. It felt very, like, we set it up the same way so that it was, again, nostalgic to the way it was on the 70s show. But when Mila and Ashton were on the show, they came in for like a day or two of rehearsals. And on the old stage, they used to walk through the garage out the back door, and then it would connect to like the stage door that goes up to their dressing rooms. And Mila walked through the garage, through the back door, and went, oh, wait, this isn't the same stage. So there was,
where's my room,
how do I get to my dressing room? And we're like, oh no, you got to go the other way, they're on the other side of the stage this time. But it was funny. Oh, that way, because you're like, oh wait, that they dropped right back into it fairly quickly.
It all just comes back to you.
Totally.
Yeah,
even with, you know, 15 plus years behind us.
That's crazy. And such a phenomenal run for that show. I mean, and just
8 years,
I mean, and in reruns, living on, and then streaming or whatnot. And then I know, I think I watched the pilot of the 80s show.
I did that also, yeah.
Which wasn't really a spinoff of the 70s show. It was just the 80s show.
Yeah. It was a one-off that they tried to do, like, kind of on the heels of the 70s show, it didn't have any crossover characters or it wasn't a spinoff. So I felt that it, while it was fun to do, it definitely didn't
have
find its footing at all.
And then you've also kind of had to recreate Mad About You, right?
Yes.
I mean,
another,
that's huge.
It was huge. Yeah. I got the call to do Mad About You, the reboot. And I was like, okay, are we doing the same thing? And, you know, again, it was, you know, Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt had a heavy hand in how they wanted it to feel and look, but they wanted
I'm
it
out.
To be similar. I know.
Exactly. I'm out.
Yeah. So there was, it was a lot of show and tell and, you know, keep it the same, but change it, update it, get it into the 2020s, so to speak. And, it was a challenge. It was fun though. I really am proud of those sets. I wish that the show had continued on, but whatever.
I thought, cause I was looking again at them, they're beautifully done and they're complete.
Yeah.
They're nostalgic, but updated again. Like,
exactly.
You know, you reuse things, you get new things, but people have the same style and you really kept with that. And I thought it looked gorgeous. I love that apartment.
And the layout of it, parts of it were a little weird where I was like, I don't understand why this was like this, but okay, we'll just keep they wanted the layout similar with like updated furniture. But I was like, oh, well, we should still have, not everyone gets rid of every piece of furniture they ever had.
No.
And so we, again, that was that the feel of like, let's keep some of the pieces, update some pieces, and give it a little bit of a modern feel. I know we completely redid the kitchen, so that was like a whole new space. And then their bedroom still wanted to give it the same feel. I was able to, Paul Reiser had the piano in his house, so we went and picked that up.
Oh.
He's like, oh, I have the piano if you want it. And I was like, sure, we'll take it.
Yeah, why not? Because it would fit if you have the same floor plan, it fits perfectly, and they totally would have kept
they're
that.
They're never gonna get. Yeah, they're never getting rid of a piano.
Yeah,
a little weird that it's in the bedroom, but we're not gonna go there.
You didn't make that decision, Tara. You didn't.
I
make
did
that.
Not.
And then I was looking. You did Greek with
I did
with my friend, who I haven't seen in person
in ages, me either,
15 years, Corey. I just have been on the same lot with him for 9 months, and I still haven't seen him, but I'm going to get him. No. I'm going to get him this week, Corey Lorenzen. I'm going to get him.
Miss him.
I adore him. We just sort of keep in touch, and I know that I was on Radford when you guys were doing Greek, and you were in like the, it was like a basement, set. It was so weird.
so weird. That space was originally supposed to be a parking garage for the stages above it.
I believe it.
And then at some point, a movie came in and was like, we need stages. We'll just convert this parking garage into a stage.
No.
Which never felt because really weird. It was weird.
What made it so weird was that the ceilings were so low. And every time you walk into a soundstage, the ceilings are huge and gigantic because they got to get grids and lights and everything up there. But I just remember going in and being like claustrophobic of like, there's no space up there. Like, how is everything getting done? It's so weird.
Somehow we did it.
Oh, they look great. They look great.
Those were really fun sets.
Yeah. I mean, dorms and like you had that great woodwork and like
fraternity houses and sorority houses and like a big yard for giant parties.
Yeah. That was fun.
And we shot all over that lot and made it look our campus. It was such fun. And I love working with Corey. He's fantastic. And we keep missing each other when he'd call me and be like, are you available? No,
I know.
Got a job.
Yeah.
And then when I'm working, he's not working either or something. I'm like, come on, when is it going to happen again?
Well, that money train that he's on of the Goldbergs is ending. Right. So I think he's going to be available soon. So we'll see what he's got.
Right.
See what's coming up for him. Yeah, he's great. So I did a movie with him in Albuquerque in like mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. And that's how I know him.
Right. Well, because did you do Fanboys?
Fanboys. I did Fanboys with him. And it was such a bond. It was so awful and such a bonding experience that we've never really, we just love each other because we got through it.
Right. Type of thing. You got through the trenches.
Yeah. And then you had a magnificent run also on 30 Rock. I mean,
on Third Rock from the Sun.
30 Rock, sorry. Third Rock from the Sun.
Oh,
yeah.
It's okay.
Because I just wrote down 30. Sorry. I loved that show. I loved it. I loved John Lithgow. I loved everything. It was so quirky and stupid, and I laughed out loud all the time. I loved that show.
I loved the show. I loved the people. The Turners, who did that 70s show, also created Third Rock from the Sun. And
genius.
It was an amazing run. Everyone had such an amazing experience. The producer, Patrick Kenlon, we were all standing around one day, and he's like, it'll never be this good again.
Oh, that's how I feel about Parks. Yeah. Well, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
And we said that at the end too. It'll never be like this again.
Right.
That's sad.
Well, I mean, I did that 70s show with the same producers again.
But you had that. That's a feeling. I mean, it's kind of the same, but you had that early on. For someone to say that's kind of like,
I had that in like very fairly early in my career.
It's golf downhill from here. Like, no.
It was wonderful when the Turners walked through the 90s show sets the first time. Like, they got tears in their eyes because they're like, you brought us home.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that was my goal, was to make sure that they, like, it was all about making them happy.
Uh-oh.
And it's interesting because their daughter's also a producer on the show as well. So it's like a family affair. And I was like, Lindsay, who's their daughter, was like a teenager when we were doing Third Rock from the Sun and That 70s Show. And now she's a writer producer.
Oh,
so
God.
It's like amazing to have kind of the whole family involved, and know that I was able to like bring them back to what was so fantastic the first time.
But you also, you come from a family of people working in Hollywood. I mean, you have a legacy. You have a phenomenal legacy. And here is what's so crazy to me. I got a puppy last week.
Congratulations.
He's a mutt. I don't know what he is. He looks like a dachshund. Yeah, perfect. And so I asked my 4-year-old twin boys, okay, what are we going to name him? They said Rocky. I said, I already had a dog named Rocky. Can we fix something else? And they said, Benson.
Oh, my God.
Benson. And I was like, Benson.
Where did they get that from?
I have no idea how they came up with that name. But then... organizing this talk with you, I looked and your dad had done Benson. I was like, this is crazy. This is crazy. Because when I looked up Benson to show my husband, because he has no idea what that show was, I immediately looked up the designer. I was like, oh my God, this is so crazy. I'm talking to his daughter. Like, this is insane. But I just was a weird moment of like, oh, that's so weird. Benson, we have a...
Yeah.
We have a Benson somewhere. I think there he is. He's sleeping. He's exhausted from his walk. cutest little guy. But yeah, Benson. And I mean, looking at your dad, I mean, the role of shows your father had and that you learned from, I'm sure, were exposed to all of them, must have been fantastic and exciting.
Yeah, I mean, my whole life was pretty much growing up around my father and his work as a production designer.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been on, you know, every studio lot my whole life. He mainly did multi-camera sitcoms, but he started in like live television. He has an Emmy for An Evening with Fred Astaire from, I think, 1952.
It's amazing. That's amazing.
So he worked up until 1994, I believe.
Wow.
So he had a very full career, and he worked before An Evening with Fred Astaire also with live television. So, I mean, he saw the transition of everything, but, you know, Soap, Benson, Golden Girls, Empty Nest, Bawd, Good Times, all the iconic multi-camera sitcoms that, you know, people grew up with in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s.
Hey, I should ask you, when they're redoing those, aren't you pissed that you're not doing them?
but not. It's funny.
Steve Olsen does. They're tributing to the work so much. I mean, they really are. Right. But
I think Bernie Visca did the one with Good Times.
Oh right.
So I was like,
oh right.
This is where you need to go. My dad, I can't even remember what I'll say in the 80s. My dad donated a large collection of his drawings to the UCLA Film and Television Archives.
Oh, fantastic.
And then when my father passed away, I donated all of his drawings and photographs to the Art Directors Guild.
Oh, that's awesome.
So between those two locations, all of his drawings, or most of them, are somewhere to be found.
Yeah.
It's funny, Steve Olsen reached out to me because he thinks that they might be doing Maud.
Yeah.
And he's like, are there drawings for it? I was like, well, these are the only two places I know of that they are. Unfortunately, he hasn't found them yet, but they're still looking because there's thousands of pages of drawings.
It's funny too, because you, as a viewer, sometimes you miss little niches and everything that they actually built into set. So it is really great if he has those drawings, I'm sure.
Completely.
But yeah. Oh my God. It's amazing. Did he bring you on set when you were little? Did he teach you drawings? Like, how did you get into this? I mean,
I've been going to sets my whole life since I was little. I mean, I remember being on the set of Soap and it seemed normal. He'd take me to they used to shoot two shows on a Friday night.
Wow.
Even when I started working as a set decorator, they would shoot two shows on a Friday night. So he would take me to the first show. He'd go and sit in the booth where they would be with the director and the technical director. And I would sit in the last row in the audience seat. And I would sit and watch the shows as a kid.
Oh my God.
So you know, kind of around it my whole life. When I was in high school, I wanted to be a graphic artist, and kind of was trying. I was like, I'm not going to be in the entertainment industry. I don't want that. And I wanted to design packaging and graphics. And then when I was in college, I started taking art classes and kind of was not really, I had heard that graphic arts was a very compacted industry that was filled with people. And I was like, maybe I don't want to do this. And I talked to my dad and I was like, if I take all these classes, would you even consider like hiring me? Even if I start as a PA, I'll like sweep the floors. I don't care. And so I took set design and theater design and all the classes, drafting and rendering and that sort of thing in college. I was a fine arts major. And the, after I graduated, I was like, what can I do to help? So he had me like drawing stages and,
oh, that's great.
And like helping wherever I could so that I kind of could get experience.
Right.
So I was doing a little of everything. And a little bit of, I had done some kind of shopping when I like some during summers in high school, for decorators, cause they were non-union shows. So I didn't need to be a union person. And when I graduated, I was like, what can I do? So I started, drafting and doing a little shopping. And then one day he's like, okay, I need you to sit in this booth and watch those monitors and make any changes that need to be happening. And it was kind of thrown into the fire for sure.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it for sure. And then I just kind of have gone from there. I worked with him for 4 years. They were probably four of the hardest years of my career.
Oh, wow.
Because he was doing, at the time he was doing 7 shows.
Oh my goodness.
As a production designer. Yeah. This was in like the early 90s.
Wow.
Yeah. And he had great assistant art directors on all the shows. And he was like, you're going to be the assistant art director on this. But that also meant that I was the decorator. So I was drafting all the plans, overseeing the construction, and going out and shopping it and site decorating it.
I think he got some cheap labor there.
He definitely got some cheap labor there. And I was able to get in the union, the set decorating union during that time. And then when he retired, I put my name out to production designers and I was hired by Garvinetti to actually set design for Grace Under Fire.
And that was such a good show.
Yeah. And in that time, Rochelle Mosier was decorating Third Rock from the Sun and the show Sybil. And Sybil got to be such a huge show that she couldn't do both of them. Mm. And because I had my set decorating card, Garvin said, would you consider decorating the show Third Rock from the Sun? And I was like, sure, why not?
Yeah.
And I jumped right in and fell in love with the whole process and fell in love with decorating and working on that show. Just, it was such a charmed situation.
I'm sure with your dad, like learning from him, like angles, I would think that, because to me, multi-camera is all about angles and like those weird walls that like, oh, that's weird in an apartment. Why would they have that? But it's for camera angles and
right,
like, showing emphasis on those walls in decorating or like, always the most important thing is where's the sofa going to be or, you know.
Right. It never makes sense to me. I'm like, why is the sofa facing away from the fireplace? That's just how it is.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
The weirdest thing to me watching a sitcom is when they try to show that fourth wall.
Oh.
That's always so weird. Like, it works in That 70s Show with that spin camera. Like, it works.
Yes. And we built it out. Like, we designed it, like, the fourth wall makes sense in that space.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, what would be on this fourth wall? And I created a little sewing nook for Kitty and the TV and, you know, like things that were kind of there before too, because we didn't want to make a lot of changes. But yes, sometimes when we do a fourth wall, it just doesn't make sense.
They do it on the Conners sometimes.
Uh-huh.
When they're in the kitchen. Because I don't know why.
And that's got weird angles. That set has a lot of weird angles.
It's very weird when they show that, like, by the fridge angle or something. They're trying to get the backside of them. It's like, it doesn't look right. But it also, to me, is like when they... when they want to put a backing wall out there, make it a hallway, and then it's all of a sudden it's like no one cares about texture, or like they didn't get the molding up in time, and then we just get like a flat painted wall, and they're like, oh, make it, you know, just extend,
make it look good,
and you're like, well, I don't know, put some artwork up there off center and some sconces or something.
Let me put a sconce, maybe a narrow console table if we can fit one in.
There's not a lot I'm going to do that's going to make this look real unless you give me something to make it look real. And sometimes I feel like fourth walls are like that. Like, they're
sometimes
they're pulling in that wall sometimes. And so.
Because we want to shoot outside this window through the, I mean, we did it a little on the 90s show, but we were able to, they were able to rake the camera enough that we didn't have to put in a fourth wall.
Yeah.
And sometimes the production designer actually designs it with the intention of a fourth wall going in.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I'm obsessed in my world with always like color palette. And I look a lot on shows of like trying to guess that in a way of like, oh, they're muted here. Or they went bright, you know. Did your dad teach you about camera with colors and or anything like that? Is there anything specific in multicam that you try to stay away from or you always go to? Or
I mean, early on when we started, when the cameras were videotape, you know, we had to really avoid like white. Red is sometimes a little too hot for the video, but that was videotape. Now we're in 4K and you can kind of do everything. So much has changed in the 32 years that I've been doing this.
The new cameras are actually, I think, too good.
I'm like, are we seeing that? Do we need to see that?
Too good. And I have a real lighting problem with like fluorescents and LEDs, and this doesn't work, and now this flickers, and like, so the new cameras really are so intense that they pick up on all these lighting nuances, and it's a whole another layer of job for us.
Completely.
With lighting.
And it also depends, on like DPs. Like the show I just finished was a single camera show, and the DPs wanted to light everything with our practicals.
Yeah, that's the new world. That's it.
That's the new world.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, then you give me that light bulb so I can walk around with it, so I can make sure it fits in the fixtures that I get so that we can accommodate your needs.
Oh, I said, then you give me the money for your lighting package. And then then I can go out and buy 7 different lights that then have to get tested, and only one works. And then can I even get the, you know, get more of that one? This last one is a joke. This last show I've been on, the lighting, it's a joke. It was such a pain in the ass.
With multi-camera though, the DPs are pretty accommodating, and it's not, because they're, it's still kind of on the theatrical end of things.
Right.
Because it's a three camera, it's a proscenium type setup. So you don't, it's not quite as bad.
Yeah.
But you know, now they're, but with the LED lighting, you know, it's like in California, it's impossible to find an incandescent bulb anywhere.
We can't even get incandescents like sent to us on like from Amazon. Amazon's like, oh, sorry, you like that fixture? Too bad. We don't send it to California.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for us, it's, you know, like we stockpile incandescent bulbs because we can't get them.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating.
Yes.
And Amazon's equally frustrating with not being able to send us that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it, you know, over the years, it was a lot of like his theory, which has changed a lot, was that you your set dressing and the art and all that kind of is not supposed to upstage the actor ever.
Yes.
So for when I first started, it was more about keeping it kind of really neutral, and less statement-y. Where now, I think almost anything goes. They're looking for bold and interesting artwork. And I mean, you still want the actors to be center stage and you don't want, you know, anything to jump out at you.
Right.
But the more I watch shows and do them, they're looking for something that's more interesting and less neutral. I mean, when I remember when I first started, I felt like the beige sofa was like the king. Right. And now kind of anything goes.
Yeah, with, especially with like patterns. I always fear sofa pattern sofa because of how wardrobe has to work off of it.
Completely. I the costume designer and supervisor who did 70s came back and did 90s.
Oh, that's
so cool. We already had like it was a really nice chemistry with us. And so as I was finding fabrics and all that, I'd send them the samples or pictures of everything so that they knew that they what they were getting into. But even when we moved the living room sofa into the basement, I was like, here's the fabric. And yeah. And then they were like, can we do something with the Afghan, which played predominantly in the 70s show living room. And I was like, yeah, let's like fold it more or put it on the arm so it doesn't, because they're like, we're having so much trouble with the pattern and the sofa and the Afghan and then putting our actors in clothes.
Yeah,
Because
those palettes aren't 70s and 90s are not the same,
and they don't go together at all.
Yeah, they don't. But I didn't when I watched it. I didn't find anything distracting. Like I didn't like even like the bold some of the boldness of their clothes. Like when they were on the sofa, I didn't feel like it just the characters were in it. Like I don't feel like it distracted. It was great.
No, I don't think it was distracting at all either. I think it all worked really cohesively, and you know they did a fantastic job with the wardrobe too. Once again,
yeah,
it's
fun,
amazing.
It's ugly, but it's fun.
Yeah,
to see.
But it's fun. Yeah, and quirky, and I was like, oh, I remember that.
There's something more enticing or like nostalgic about 70s wardrobe.
Completely.
90s wardrobe.
Find that the 70s wardrobe is a little more, far more fun.
Yeah.
As is so much of like the decor of the 70s was so fun and crazy and the color palette was far more interesting than the 90s. But in this, while we were creating the 90s show, it was like trying to be as accurate as possible, but still have fun with it.
Yeah. I achieved. I loved it.
Yeah,
Funny too, my brother, like, a couple of weeks ago was like, are you watching that 90s show when it first came out? And I was like, no. He's like, you should, because that's when you grew up. Because he's 10 years younger. So he's like, you should watch that. Because I was like, yeah, I'm going to get to it. I'm like,
right. There's so much programming these days.
I know. It's great.
It's so hard to keep up with it.
It's so great. I mean.
It's great.
It's great. It's
keeping us all employed.
It is. And I think it makes award season really hard. Like, it makes it really, because everything's really good. Everything's been elevated so much. It's really hard to narrow it down. And, like, I just, for TV, I mean, film is always extravagant. And you got the budget and whatever and the time-ish.
Completely.
But TV, I mean, it's nothing like in the 90s, really. I would assume you would say that too from doing a sitcom in the 90s and now. Like, don't you feel like it's as for lighting or the design or whatever, like it's just different.
It's changed so much.
Yeah.
I will say that there's so much programming, you know, even in like with the streaming services, the programming has just got to the point where you can't keep up.
No.
I
don't know where shit is. I don't remember. No. I'm like, oh, I watched, but what was that on? And then it takes me like 10 minutes to be like, oh.
You gotta Google where it's on.
Oh, wait, that's on Hulu? Oh, shit, I don't remember. Right. Like, I don't remember where I watched something. That's what really bothers me.
Right.
The 20 minutes to get to what I was watching that I don't remember what I was watching it on.
Completely. I mean, I know that in, like, in the 90s and 2000s when it was, you know, multi-camera sitcoms were king. Yeah. And they filled most of the programming on network television. Yeah. It was, you know, far easier to be able to flip on the TV and see it if you were lucky that you had TiVo and you could record it.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like, every night from 8 to 9 were two sitcoms, mm-hmm. basically. And right. and then some networks, 9 to 10. I
did
mean,
four, right?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah, it was like, are you one of the first, because you did The Ranch, wasn't that uh-huh. one of the first multicam on streaming,
Netflix.
Right?
Yeah, it was the first multicam on Netflix.
Was that like an experiment where you were just like, I don't know how this is going to go. Like, I don't...
Well, it's funny. You know, the producer who produced That 70s Show actually produced The Ranch. Mm. And it was with Ashton and Danny again. And the director, David Trainer, did That 70s Show as well. So it was a little bit of old home. I think there were like 11 of us that had wow. been on That 70s Show that then transferred over and did The Ranch.
Oh, awesome.
The Prop Master was the same. And that was an experiment for Netflix for sure to see, do we want to get into multi-camera sitcoms and what's the reaction to it? And it's funny, when I went to watch That 90s Show, you know, on the top, they give you like suggestions of like top suggestions or top shows.
Oh, yeah.
And The Ranch is still trending.
Oh, yeah.
It's all still, these, you know, 5 years
It still comes
later.
Up on mine, too. Because yeah. I watched the first couple episodes when it came out thinking, like, how are they going to do this? Like, how is this? And it's the other thing that's weird, I don't know, for me or for you is when you do something on streaming, it's just out. And then right. you don't know if it sucked or, oh, it's in the top 10 this week. And then we don't know what's going on over there. So
we have no idea. I have no idea how
yeah.
Netflix gauges their ratings.
And
it's frustrating because, I mean, here we are right now. I you know, the show dropped a week, 90s show dropped a week ago.
Yeah.
And it's still trending and it's still, I think, I don't yeah. know if it's still number one today, but like, do they consider that a success?
I don't know.
And we're all sitting and waiting
it's
to find
very
out.
It's very anticlimactic.
It really is. Like, I remember, you know, when I was on 70 Show or Third Rock from the Sun, and you flip open the paper to see where it's rated.
Yeah, like every Thursday, now, the Nielsen's came
yeah,
out, right?
The Nielsen's every Thursday. Came out. Like now, Nielsen's still do network television, but
yeah, but
I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I don't know.
It's very anticlimactic when you do it something really on streaming for the creative people, I feel.
Yeah,
I
for
don't
us,
know.
Yes, for sure.
But when you get something that's going to be on streaming, you're like, oh, sweet. Like, there's
yeah,
something
great.
Like,
got...
oh, well, clearances will be a little lighter, or the money's
right.
a little better, or, you know, the schedule will be a little, you know, but some of them are really low budget, but
right.
I, yeah. And then also,
even...
it's,
oh, go ahead.
No, it's just not as exciting. as
well, and when
TV.
We did The Ranch, I mean, I think now, these days, they usually just pick up for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
We were doing 20 episodes a season.
Oh, they treated it like a real deal.
They treated it like a
yeah.
like a network sitcom and did 20, but we would shoot 20 episodes and they would drop 10 at a time.
That's they were going out.
Oh yeah.
That's in yeah. the hey, was it like 2016, 17? That's when they were spending it.
Right. When... Exactly. And it was, I mean, I felt with that show they really wanted as authentic as possible. The sets, John Schaffner designed fantastic sets.
I mean, that indoor-outdoor that you had was fantastic.
The driveway.
Oh, my God, it was fantastic. Yeah.
And then when we would do snow, it was just beautiful.
Oh, I don't know.
Like, we'd snow in that whole set. Of course, we had snow everywhere for years.
Okay. Yeah, fake.
But it was,
fake
they, we really, they wanted it, like, gritty and, rustic and aged, and everything we did had to have a patina on it. And
yeah,
it was so much fun to do. And it was like, so, I mean, I'm a city girl. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. So for me to do like ranching, it was outside my scope, but I just dove right in.
Yeah. Well, that's the fun part. Then you get to like live vicariously through characters and like, oh, what would they have? And like,
right.
Yeah. No, that's.
And
great.
I got excited, like, they bring a cow on set, we have a pig on set. I'm like, I'm so excited to see, you know, like livestock.
Yeah. In our sets, shitting on our sets. Like, mm-hmm. They think it's real too. Like,
right.
Yeah. I love those sets are fantastic. And that had a decent run. That was a couple of seasons.
Yeah, 4 years.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was a really good run. And it was kind of like they set it up. It was set up like regular broadcast network sitcom schedule, where we would start in like August and shoot through till February. So it was the luxury of that was so great, because we were like, oh, we're coming back next season. Great. I can take a hiatus during the summer, maybe go on vacation. That's now good. We're just kind of show to show and waiting it out a little bit.
It's been a long time since it was like a regular schedule, because even when I bounce back and forth, you never really knew, or like they would overlap, or like then you don't have any time off, and
right,
yeah, it's exciting. No,
it is.
Can we talk about HSG?
Sure.
Can we talk about the best artwork in the business, and how you curate, like, running a prop house and having a awesome career? Like, I don't even know how you do that.
Well, I'll start with my dad started the business in 1978. It's Hollywood Studio Gallery, and he felt that there was a missing element in set decorating, prop houses. I mean, even when you hear about like the Brady Bunch, and you're like, well, that painting was from the Paramount prop house, and it was on, you know, these 16 other shows. And,
right,
you know,
right.
So it was, he, as a production designer, he felt that there was a niche for artwork. And in 1978, he founded Hollywood Studio Gallery. And at that time, it was basically like a collection of stuff he found at the swap meet, worked with art companies to buy art, and he grew it and hired great people and, you know, curated, you know, a huge collection of art. I think we have over 50,000 pieces of art and wall decor.
It's fantastic.
In our inventory right now. And gosh, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago or so, when my dad, maybe a little longer now, 20 years ago, he kind of retired. I took over and ran the business for him. And it just was about kind of filling in the niche of what decorators were looking for in terms of art and kind of growing it. And we do all our own custom framing.
The framing is
as well as framing for the industry, for people who bring in their own artwork. And it's just been about like collecting and finding new and interesting pieces from all over the world. How do I do it? I have really great employees that
you do
allow me
you do
to decorate.
Wonderful employees, I must say.
As well as, you know, continuing to shop and look for art to bring in to grow our collection, because you can't let it get stagnant, because then everyone's like, well, I've used all these pieces, I don't have anything else, I can't use anything else.
There is always something new when I go in, which is always like, oh, who can I use that for? I think that's one of the things that really prompts a great prop house, is when you see something and you're like, I need to keep that in mind. I need to use that piece. Like, curating things like that isn't easy, because what works for, you know, one show isn't going to work for another, but you somehow keep this huge collection that works in modern and, you know, dated, you know, you're doing like a dated hospital. You got it. Like, you, and I have to say the framing is so key, because a 90s framed photo is much different than
totally different
now. So, and there's, you have those gems in your prop house that are awesome, that are go-tos also. So I can't thank you enough for keeping it updated and fresh and, you know, always wanting to see what's new. And again, your employees, I adore, so.
Yeah. I adore them myself.
Fausto, I,
it's,
all of them. Yeah, all of them. All
you know,
them.
And for that, it's, you know, it's funny, when I was on 70's Show, I couldn't use 90% of my collection. And which was really frustrating, because we were buying a lot of modern art at the time. And I'm like, well, one day I'll be able to use it. So when I finally got into like contemporary shows, I was like, oh yay, I can finally use some of this stuff.
Right.
You know, we find that it's, you have to continue to grow and find new stuff. And for sometimes it's not even like getting a lot of new stuff. It's maybe revamping it and putting new frames on it.
Yeah.
Rehanging it in different locations when people didn't see it before and now they're seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But I'm in the same way. I'll be walking through any prop house and go, oh, I got to remember that piece for next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, every decorator is going to decorate. We can all be given the same exact script and the same exact set. And every decorator is going to do the set completely different.
And
that's the beauty of what we do.
Yeah. Well, I always, like I said, I look at other people's sets and I think, God, I wouldn't have done that. That's so smart. Like,
right. I do that all the time, too.
I just constantly look at shit and I'm like, damn, that was good. I would have never done that. I would have just done those lazy, like, pedestrian way, and they upped it, and I didn't even think about that, so, yeah.
You know, and it's, I that's why I respect our craft. It's like, everyone brings something totally different to every set.
Yeah.
And the creativity that we all bring is, you know, unparalleled.
Yeah. I think, too, with, you know, the Hollywood Studio Gallery, just you also have collections. I wanted to talk about, like, duplicates or collections of artwork are so important. Of they're not all just like one-off pieces. Like, that helps so much when you're, like, you know, you're doing some, like, a hospital, you're doing, you know, a office, you need things that are the same.
A suite.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I always look for, like, oh, there's four of these, and there's four of these, and they work together, like, look at this, like, we made it all
that's, when we do our shopping, you know, there's always great to have, like, a really fabulous one-off piece.
Yeah.
But more often than not, as we, you know, shop for new art, we're always looking for a suite of at least three or four pieces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it's maybe three or four pieces, and then maybe three or four pieces of another piece, like art, that might not be exactly the same, but then we can frame them all, and they'll all work together in the same color palette.
Yeah.
So it's a process that we're very conscious in the way we accumulate and do our purchasing, because we want to be able to make it so that it'll be cohesive, work with potentially even other art that we have in the gallery is already. And that you as a decorator can come in and be like, I need eight pieces. And you're like, oh, here's four of these and four of those. And they all go together. Great.
Yeah. I think, too, you've in the past couple of years put everything online, which is super helpful. I know it's probably not great for everyone working there. And it's a little harder because, you know, you see something online and you don't know. I don't know if it's available. Like, there's you just see something and then checking and. That's the way we've evolved in our decorating. It's like, oh, I have a new set at 7 a.m. tomorrow. It's 4 o'clock. Are these pieces in? Can I send a truck right now? Like, because as much as we'd like to commit everything to memory, we don't. And having it online is fantastic. It's a great resource for us.
So my father passed away 12 years ago this year. And after he passed away, knowing where the internet was going, knowing that all these prop, most of the prop houses were going online, I was like, this is a priority.
It's a huge, huge undertaking. Huge. Oh my gosh.
And we needed to be able to photograph everything so that it was still color corrected, so that it actually looks like what it is. Cause there's a lot of prop houses that have pictures of furniture. I'm like, that's not the same color online.
Yeah.
So for us, there was a lot of accuracy that needed to happen to make a website viable for us. And I brought in a professional photographer to help set up the initial setup. He shot probably the first, I don't know, 5,000 photographs.
Oh my God.
And I also didn't want to launch a website until I knew that I had like the bulk of our main floor photographs, so that it could be something that you could go to and instantly. And then it's just been chipping away at it over the last, 6 years. But when we launched it, I felt it was so necessary. Now, what I also find is decorators and buyers still come in on a regular basis because somehow artwork, similar to like soft goods like curtains, is something that they want to choose themselves.
Yes, yes. A lot of the times I would say mostly HSG is the only prop house I do in person at this point.
Right, yeah.
Because of the show and the schedule and all that. But if I'm, going, I'm going to go, I'll do the art. I'll go do the art and, we'll divide and conquer. But you're absolutely right. Seeing it in person is just, even because you guys even have the measurements online. Like you can scale it out. Like, it's 45 inches. All right, that'll be great. And then you see it in person. And I think what happens more often is when you get there, you just see a different piece that'll work better. That's mostly what happens. It's not anything against that piece. It's just that I found something else that
might work. And I also find kind of on that similar tone is that like more and more as we use buyers, it's like I get inspired by other pieces that I might not see. So if I'm out shopping in the actual prop house, I'll be like, I was thinking I wanted a white chair, but now I see this like blue chair, and that changes the whole trajectory of the whole set.
The number one thing I tell the buyers is like, well, look, we're doing this muted palette. I want a beige sofa. Shoot, 4. Don't give me 10. Mm-hmm. Shoot like 4. And then if you see something else that you think this character might have, please shoot it. Because it's exactly, I'm on the same page as you. It just throws you off and you think, God, that's a much better decision. What was I thinking with beige? Yep. Like,
it completely is. But artwork's the same way. It's like you come in and you go, okay, I'm looking for a landscape. And then you're like, oh, but this abstract is even better.
Yeah. It's HollywoodStudioGallery.com if anyone wants to go to that. And I can't thank you enough for keeping that up to date because it's a gem.
It's something that when I took over the business, I felt that it was necessary to continue as a resource for the industry. It makes me, I love art. So I've been around, I've been influenced my whole life. My dad as a young, when I was little, my dad would be like, who's this artist and what did they do? And, that sort of thing. So he taught me really early on about art and art history and
that's awesome.
Architecture. And so it's in me.
It's also a super cool building that you have.
We rent. I wish we owned it.
I love that building.
This great Art Deco building.
I do love that building. And I always like when you go, just weird thing, but when you go upstairs, you're back in the photography section and then you go down that little hallway, I find it so creepy, and you have like the old portraits there, or you used to, and I'm always
this is
the creepiest. Like I love this hallway because it's creepy, but and it's a teeny little, it's just a
two little narrow hallway. It doesn't have a lot of lighting, so it's kind of like a little spooky.
I love it. I think like
we have
that's
no ghosts though.
Oh, I was gonna say I feel like that's probably where the ghosts hang out, but maybe not.
I've never seen or felt them.
Yeah.
Not like at Warner Brothers.
No, Warner Brothers is totally haunted.
Totally.
Totally.
But in a good way. I feel like in a good way.
Oh, I feel like it's a lot of actors and actresses that didn't make it.
Disgruntled actors.
They're sitting up in that third floor turning the lights on and off and like.
Totally.
Yeah. But yeah. Thank you. For doing this.
Happy to talk to you.
Oh, you're such a gem yourself. So thank you so much for doing this. I'm so in awe of your work at all times. And
And I of you and your work.
And the prop house. I mean, always.
There are other people with artwork.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. I still use them too.
We share the love.
I can't find everything at my own location.
I share the love too. But you're the first place I go. That's it. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
If Fausto doesn't pick up that phone, I'm out. No, it's great, and it's a wonderful little like environment in there too, of like seeing other decorators, which is always nice. You have like a little room there for us to like sit and like
customer room.
Sit down for a second.
And have a moment.
Yeah, and I have given the framing department very high demands and very short getting pieces done, and they've always done it wonderfully, and I'm always appreciated of them. So, thank you.
You know, the beauty of what we're able to do with our frame shop is that we keep some stock in stock. So we can turn, if we have the molding in stock, we can turn it around in a matter of hours.
If
need be.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that on a regular basis, but you know, and if you need to order framing in, we can do that as well. But we also have like great resources that we're able to pull from to be able to turn artwork around in a fairly quick time. Yeah. To meet the demands of our entertainment industry.
Yeah.
If you're going out to like Michaels or Fast Frame, they don't understand how we work.
No, I've never.
And that we need it overnight.
No, they don't get it. And they don't. That's just not their model. That's not what they're there for.
Not at all.
They're there for like, pick it up in 2 weeks. And you're like, excuse me?
Excuse me. I need this yesterday.
I would say on impeachment, I had so many pieces done for them, and such the quick turnaround, and they just always I'm always marveled at their work. And we had such specific pieces done even on For All Mankind with all of these astronaut and badges and like the mats. I had them like, can you cut this out so that the badge is in there, and then I got the signatures, and they were so into it, and it was great. Is it Cody?
Oh, yeah, Cody.
Cody.
Yeah, Cody's so sorry. Really mastered kind of those specialty type mats for like flags and pennants and badges.
Oh, yeah.
We did a ton of work on Top Gun Maverick for Jan Pascal with all this military stuff and special shapes and framing and he just somehow honed his skill and just has been able to master it.
Because the great thing is too, like I come in with an idea that I found online or like I've seen in somebody's office, and he has some better, well, why don't we just do this? And why don't we give it two colors and I can make it. I like a thin mat. I'm like a weirdo.
Uh-huh.
And it's always trying to talk me out of it. And I'm like, no, I just want a thin mat around. I don't know. I want the artwork more. I don't know. I'm weird.
Right.
But there was like, oh, there's this one up with a thin mat.
Well, some of it you have to do about scale with the size of the frame or it's going to look weird. And but I understand. You want to feature the artwork. That's why you're framing art.
And I learn from that too. It's all learning too. So, well, thank you for giving me this time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Fantastic.
I really appreciate it.
I love the show.
Happy to talk about our craft.
I know.
Working on and shows that we get to do that we're blessed to be able to do.
Yes, really. I really enjoyed speaking with Tara. She's wonderful. She's sweet. She's kind. She's interesting. She's so talented. And I found so eloquent in her description of how she works and working with her father and such great little tidbit stories of, hanging on, actors hanging on to set dressing and offering it up. I mean, how nice was that? So, yeah, I really enjoyed speaking with her. And like I said, I barely get to see other decorators. So this is one of the great things, this podcast of like seeing and talking to people. And as I said last episode with Denise, who I am friends with and hung out with a lot, I never get to see them. And the pandemic, and then I moved. And so I'm probably just using this podcast to keep up with people at this point. So yeah, I thank her immensely for giving me some time to talk about the 90s show. And I buzzed through that quickly. It's a good time. I love the throwback to 90210. The sets were fun and interesting, and the throwbacks and seeing the updates that she was able to give these sets, I just think it's fantastic. And it's fun. It's a fun show. So what do I got? So coming up soon, I have production designer John Pano, who does The Last of Us, which if you are not watching The Last of Us, you're missing out. It's awesome. I didn't say that top of the show, but yes, I've watched the first four episodes of The Last of Us, and boy, that third episode with Nick Offerman is phenomenal. Phenomenal television. Production designer Jenny Mueller, she has the film Sick, which I think is on Amazon. I'm blanking on what it's on. A really interesting horror movie that has a very up-to-date and topical influence of horror in it. That's all I'll say. It's pretty good. It's good. And hopefully soon enough, I'll be talking with set decorator Claire Kaufman, who currently has the film White Noise that is making all sorts of awards buzz. And up and coming, she has Oppenheimer. So, yeah. And I have more scheduled. But as I said, I hate to actually give out who's coming up because schedules change and it doesn't work out. And then I feel like I led you on. I don't like to be a tease like that. I don't know. But thank you for listening. Again, check out Decorating Pages TikTok, Decorating Pages Instagram for our posts. And you can check out the Decorating Pages shop on Etsy for pieces of Decorating Pages swag and some little things I might have designed that are on there. Just check that out. And if you're not getting the newsletter, just sign up at the Decorating Pages podcast website. Okay, I did it. I said all that. I really hate the self-promotion. I'm really actually not into it, if you can tell. But I hope you got an earful. I'm Kim Wanup for Decorating Pages.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.